You are listening to Hashtag Fly with Prerna Goel, award-winning entrepreneur, investor, philanthropist, and co-founder of Clinica Fi, India's first truly virtual eye and face corrective clinic.
Welcome to my podcast, Hashtag Fly, where I talk to ordinary people with extraordinary stories. My guest for today is Aparna Saxena, a childhood friend of mine, who is an unapologetic feminist, environmentalist, vegan, animal activist, and a student for life. She is the CEO of Toraja Mello, a women-led and women-focused impact business, co-founder of Riksh Impact Partner, an early-stage impact investment and advisory firm, and she leads the Asia region for She Loves Data, a global not-for-profit. Why I wanted to have Aparna on my podcast is not because of her amazing and innumerable professional achievements, but for the personal ones. I have always admired Aparna for the way she has lived her life on her own terms and by constantly challenging the status quo. So let's talk to Aparna and see what this concept of falling in love with herself means to her. Thank you for joining me, Aparna. I'm so excited that you have agreed to have a chat with me on Hashtag Fly. Obviously, you and I know each other for a very long time. We grew up together and I have always admired your ability to just live your life on your own terms. And I really wanted to bring you into this conversation because I think there are different ways in which people get to this conclusion of loving themselves. And your journey is quite different from some of the other conversations I have had. So it would be really good to go and unpeel the onion a little bit on how you have gotten to this place of just being okay with the path you are on, the life you are leading. And there are lots of things which are quite unconventional in how you are leading your life. I think it will be great. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Prerna. I'm really quite excited to have this conversation with you, especially because we both go way back. And I think we've both have observed each other's journeys. And despite the fact that we have been in geographically different locations, right after, I think, our 12th grade, we have somehow stayed connected. And I think that sort of makes me really feel that, I'd love to share my journey with you and enjoy this conversation with you.
Awesome. So let's start with just setting the stage, right? And I do this with every guest because I think it's important to get their perspective on what this concept of falling in love with themselves actually mean, because then that puts the right perspective on the conversation. So what is your definition or what do you mean by when you think about loving yourself or falling in love with yourself?
For me, loving myself would mean accepting myself with my imperfections, both, physically, emotionally, mentally, acknowledging that we as humans are fallible, right? And there is never a perfect stage. We can work towards perfection, right? We can work towards improving ourselves, but essentially accepting ourselves for who we are is really very, very critical to my, value system of, loving myself and not being caught in this constant comparison with others. Because at any point in time, across various parameters, there'll be people who will be better or worse off than you. And somewhere you have to decide to call it out and say, no, this is who I am. And these are the areas maybe I want to work on and improve. But I love and respect myself for who I am because that's my individuality. That's my personality.
Hmm. And how do you get to that level of feeling so secure about yourself, right? It's very hard. It's really hard, especially because we live in a world where you see it plastered all over the place. This concept of, social media, LinkedIn is really causing a lot of mental health issues for people right now, especially because professionally you see all the great news stories and you never see anything wrong. So how do you get to that level of self-assurance and self-confidence?
Very true. And I would be lying to myself and to you if I say that I don't feel it. So I think it's not as if it goes away. You're not self-assured permanently because we are going through lives, right? We are going through lives day to day, moment by moment. And there will be moments where you will question yourself. You will feel insecure. You will doubt yourself for various reasons. And especially in the current times, because there's so much of noise around, right? Across various media. And we are often pushed to only project the good side. And then when you only see the good around, it makes you question, hey, but in current situation, I'm not feeling so good. So, and then you are pushed to maybe in a way lie and put forward a, you know, better picture. So what I want to say with this is we have to accept, first of all, that we're not going to be happy, self-assured, confident all the time. But on the other side, neither are you always going to feel inferior, horrible, or pathetic. It's all transient. And what I can tell you, one thing that maybe reinforced that for me was at a fairly young age, I was able to get exposure to Vipassana, which is mindfulness. The whole concept of mindfulness or Vipassana is that seeing things as they are, which means in every moment, there are things happening. And we tend to live our lives always in comparison of us with others. And we rarely spend time internalizing what is it for me. If we start with that conversation, right? What is my life? What do I want my life to be? And then we move forward from there and essentially don't linger is a path to self-assurance, which means that don't sit on your laurels, but don't beat yourself up for your failures. And it's not something that can always happen for people at one aha moment. It can be in, you know, various stages. And I think, so therefore, what I would say is the first step to anything is, first of all, maybe we need to ask ourselves, like, what do I like about myself, right? What are the things I appreciate about myself? And what are the things maybe I do not appreciate and why? And then, you know, take it from there. See, the world will not really change. But what we need to realize is, irrespective of the fact that whether the world changes or not, what we expect from ourselves is on us. You need to call out that imposter syndrome repeatedly. So it's never as if, you know, you can say that, hey, I figured it all out and now it's all going to be smooth sailing. Actually, no. But the realization that I accept what I cannot control, what I can control, and I don't linger on either is the path to self-assuredness. Because then you know, okay, this is the thing which I can change. This happened to me. I can manage this. Okay, this I cannot manage. So let me do with what I can and move on.
Yeah.
Because there is never a guarantee, right? We can never say things are going to be perfect all the time, but neither are things going to be bad all the time. So essentially calling out that part where we tend to linger on either situations is a path to self-assurance, because then you know, okay, I think I'm lingering. I'm beating myself up too much. Get on with it. And what happens is, if I may say, it's a journey of continuous improvement. So the first time when something will happen, right? Say at a very young age, you are treated unfairly. Like I was bullied in middle school, by the way. It's not something I've shared because I met you after that. So I think that was one of the incidents that sort of drove in me, because I have still not been able to figure out why was I bullied? What did I do that I was bullied or treated or singled out? But in a way, then that told me that there are not always reasons and we should not look for justifications. But the fact that it happened and it told me that there was nothing wrong with me, so I should continue to be who I am. And what happens is, it took me a while to figure that out. But over a period of time, that lingering period gets shortened. I'm telling you, it's not. I think I get frustrated almost daily But I don't linger on it, right? I'm like, okay, I'm having a bad mood. I recognize it. Let me take some time out and I switch back myself.
Yeah.
So this is what happens, honestly.
Lots of really interesting insights there, right? This concept of almost separating yourself from the emotions of the day-to-day and almost becoming an observer of your life. I think that's what Vipassana is all about. There are a lot of things you can't control. So firstly, thank you for sharing that you were bullied. I was not aware of it. And I think, and to take it in a positive way is powerful, because a lot of people... Mm-hmm. that experience at a very early age to stay with them throughout their life, and in a negative way, where it's what you've done is something very positive, which is fantastic. I want to probe a bit more on this concept of it doesn't necessarily happen because there is a life-changing event. It happens over a period of time, because I think a lot of times we feel that only those people who have gone through something very dire make peace with themselves. As far as I remember, or as long as I remember, you've always been on this journey. And yes, obviously it has become a lot more pronounced and a lot more specific now, because you are, you know, from a career perspective, you're really where you want to be. In the sense you're working on social impact stuff, you're working on stuff around gender diversity and all of that. So you did go on kind of a bit more of a traditional path initially. But in terms of being at peace with yourself, I've always felt you have been this person. So talk to me about this concept of how you've gone on that journey. And maybe it wasn't one life-changing event. Maybe it was a culmination of things. Just bring that to life for our listeners.
Okay. So I believe for me, it has been a combination of nature and nurture. And then in nature and nurture both, one is what you are, say, born with, and nurture is what you're surrounded with. But the other part of nurture I want to highlight is self-nurturing, what you decide to choose for yourself. Because often I have seen we become victims of our past and we say, oh, this happened to me because of which I'm like that. And I would like to call that out a lot, and I tend to, I think. And so for me, I think born in a feminist household, you know, youngest of three, both parents were working. I had unconventional upbringing. And at that time, when I would compare myself to my other friends, I would say, okay, it's a bit different in my home. And there would be times when I would be happy about it. There would be times I wouldn't be happy about it, because I'd say, okay, yeah, we are not eating too much together, right? People are out. But over a period of time, I realized that is what generated this sense of autonomy and independence. And the fact that, you know, you are who you are. And I was never discriminated in the family. I mean, hats off to my father and my mom for my gender or for my age or the youngest. You know, of course, you're told to respect your, you know, elder siblings, etc. But it was never driven down. And I think that helped. That helped bringing in a sense of exercising your autonomy. And I remember my family championing whatever I would want to do, right? And often I would see some other friends of mine might not get the necessary permissions, but I did, because we were living it, right? So you basically lived out your choices and the good and the bad. So which means if you made a bad choice, you had to live it too. And you made a good choice, okay, you sort of, you know, accept your success. And I think with that seed planted, over a period of time, I look back on my, even in my high school, what we called as junior college, I think my personality started getting more and more defined, because I understood to a certain extent, right? I'm not telling you that the imposter syndrome was not there, because, you know, we were in a heavily academically high pressure environment. But somehow I just realized that A, I was not like my eldest brother. B, I was not like you or others. Right? I had to accept who I am and find what was good in me and forge my path and essentially pursue that rather than be caught in that spiral of constant comparison, which can happen. So, and I think support from family did help at that time. And then I would say my engineering is where I was literally by myself, and I literally sought it, right? I wanted to be out of Mumbai, wanted to be out of my current circle. That kind of thinking wanted to choose a place where there wouldn't be people who are from similar background and be on my own. And I think that really gave me that environment where I pushed myself to essentially be who I am. And I was actually, I think, quite firm at that time and essentially carved my identity. And I look back to my engineering years as my formative years, where I was famous and also infamous for the things I did. And I didn't do them to prove a point, but I did them purely because I felt it was the right thing to do. And that then developed in me the assurance of, I don't need to follow the crowd for the sake of following the crowd, as long as I own my decisions and as long as my decisions are not harming anyone else willfully. And that then continued. So what happens is then over a period of time, when you keep exercising your right of decision-making, but a combination of freedom and responsibility, right? So you own your failures too. You cannot push your failures to external factors. So own your failures and accept, you know, own your successes and move on. And I think that's how I have sort of continued to now, where, you know, you've reached a stage where, yes, you stop caring, right? So literally it reaches a stage where you literally stop caring too much about random public opinion, and you choose the circle whose opinions and ideas you value. And I think that's also what has happened in my career choices, is I'm a seeker of challenges. And as long as I was ready to accept whatever would be thrown my way, and I built up this confidence in me saying, whatever happens, I'll find my way out. And this one incident I want to say is, I think that confidence my dad had in me brought, maybe had this spark always at the back of my head that I can do this, is I have taken what people would say are very risky decisions. But I remember one time my father saying that, I'm not worried about her. She'll find her way. He literally said that, and she will figure it out. I know she can. And that sort of told me, yes, that's it. You know, I can. And as long as I believe I can, and that's what it is. So it's a built up of many, many years, Prerna, right? Many small incidents, interactions that sort of build up in you this confidence and self-assurance that you have to learn to figure out what is noise and what matters and cut out the noise.
Is there a price you pay for this?
Definitely. So you will lose popularity points at times, and I did, yeah. But later I realized, though I lost in popularity points, I later got points for, you know, being infamous. So I might not have been loved, but I was respected. And I later realized that people really used to look up to me because they said, wow, this girl had guts to stand up to a practice that had been existing. And if you want, I can share that practice with you, is that where I did engineering in Nagpur University, there was a practice of mass bunking, as it's called. And why was it happening? Because when we did engineering, at least in my university, we still had the yearly process. So you had the, you know, the semesters, but then you had the final exam, which meant that if some people could not pass through to the next stage, you would have what is called as supplementary or follow-up exams in the month of October. Now, those people who could not go to the next year, for various reasons, a lot of them just joined engineering for the sake of it, what they wanted was, they didn't want the others to progress. So what they would enforce is their other colleagues to not go for classes till they finish their October exam. So literally from August to October, so literally 2 to 3 months, everyone was expected to just go home. And this was not official, by the way. This was a practice that was just followed because it was going on for years. Everyone knew, but it was accepted. So it was agreed that it's been happening, so you just follow. And everyone just followed because people didn't want to stand out. I think for me, the fact was I had already accepted. I was the first girl to do mechanical engineering in that college, in the hostel. Already put me in a position where I didn't have enough people to look up to, which means I had to decide based on my value system. And my value system told me that I have paid to be here. My parents have taken a student loan and I'm here to study. I'm not here to go back home and do whatever. I chose to not go back home. I was the only student to not go back home. A lot of people didn't necessarily go back home, but you were not expected to show up for classes. And I showed up for classes. And because I showed up for the classes, the professors had to come and teach. Mm-hmm. And I continued. And for me, it was not about proving a point. It was about what I considered right. And I was told, hey, you are doing something you shouldn't be. You are, you know, you're getting known in the eyes of, you know, the seniors or whatever. And I said, sorry, honestly, I don't care, because for me, what matters is my parents have put in money, their hard-earned money, and I'm here to study. The only people I owe explanation to is them and myself. So I'm going to continue. And I continued, right? Did the practice stop because of me? Not necessarily, but it did tell people that you don't just have to follow what has been told to you if it doesn't logically make sense. I think people just stop themselves from questioning things when it doesn't seem right, just because the masses are following that. So I think that was one of the main incidents that stands out. And then there were obviously a few others, right? And I continued to do what I would. And I possibly wasn't the most popular, but, you know, I was respected in my own way. And did it matter that I was respected? Not necessarily, but I had my circle of friends, right? Yeah. I had my circle, I had my people, and we respected each other for who we were. And that's how it went ahead. And even for my MBA, I still stood out because I called out some comments or practices again, because I never believe in following the masses if it doesn't make sense. Right? If you see it is not logically explainable, right? And it's not creating either benefit to anyone, but it's just happening for the sake of happening, then I would not like to be part of it. And it is okay, right? I am not here to win awards for being the most popular one. And the ones who respect you and like you for who you are will remain your friends forever. And that's what, and which is what I've had in every stage. Is I've been able to find my kind of people who are not like me, but who know who I am and who respect me for who I am. And I in turn respect them for who they are.
Yeah, I was about to ask you that is it a lonely road to go on this path, because we are conditioned to live a certain way, certain conventions. And when you are questioning that, it can't be easy. So I think it's. I'm glad to hear that you found people who can be your support system, who are your kind of core group of friends, who you can lean on and they can lean on you as you go on this journey.
Yeah. And I'll also tell you that it's not as if, you know, I was super clear on day one. So there was a time when for a quite a bit of period of time, Prerna, I would not say no. And I was always this forever friend who's there, right? Because I would make myself available, even with you. Remember, I was possibly the one who would come out because everyone was just so paranoid about exams. And I saw that even in my engineering, I did that a bit. But I realized within the first year itself that whose life am I living, right? I'm supposed to be nice and kind, but not at the cost of my own comfort. And then, you know, I started saying no. And with the saying no and learning to be who you are, you figure out your people. So again, you might not have hundreds of friends or whatever who know you, but you'll have your, you know, true friends. And I think that's what matters.
Yeah. Yeah. What advice will you give somebody who you talked about nature versus nurture, right? Somebody is born with that kind of inherent quality. So what advice would you give them in terms of how can they find their voice if they're going on this journey?
First step is self-awareness, that am I where I want to be? Is this who I am? Which is tough. But the other way to maybe figure that out would be is asking yourself, am I just in a very typical kind of a circle, right? Which means, have I had the same friends all through? Am I just hanging out in only this particular kind of circle, only these kind of people? And the moment maybe you are at an age, say, at least I think by the time we are mid-teens, getting into junior college or high school, we do get a sense of autonomy in thinking, right? And I think now it's happening a bit earlier. I think that's the stage where you should try to seek circles which are different from your typical circles, because that will open your perspective. Right? Otherwise, what happens is the conditioning continues. And what I would suggest to people is seek out circles which are different from the ones you have on a day-to-day basis, and look out for people across age groups to know for various reasons, right? Mentors or guides or friends, because that will widen your perspective. And that will make you think that, okay, is this who I am? Am I more comfortable here or there? At least it keeps your, you know, mind going, right? It sort of triggers your brain cells. And the easiest way to do it, I would say, is if you've been in a particular location up to your junior college or high school, consciously choose to move to another city or place for your graduation. It will help you. It will widen your perspective, come what may. So I think that's one simpler way to do this, because not everyone will have that aha moment, right? That, hey, am I doing this? But consciously choosing a geographically different location will give you slightly different exposure. I also recommend people to work out of their home countries for a certain period of time, either study or work out of their home country, because we live in such a diverse world that if we do not expose ourselves to different environments, cultures, thinking, we get caught up in our conditioning, in our own stereotyping and biases.
If you look back at your life, Aparna, I mean, it's coming across as you've been quite secure in who you are from a very early age, and you have pushed yourself to go on this journey, which hasn't been an easy journey, but you've pushed yourself to go on this journey. If you look back at your life, are there things you would do differently?
To be very honest, this is a question I've asked myself a few times. And if you had asked me this, say, 5-6 years ago, I might have said, yes, I would have changed this, changed that. And I think some decision-makings where maybe you've been a bit too vulnerable, because one part of being self-assured is you also have, you know, your idea of self-respect that, hey, I don't want to be wrong, right? Or I don't want to look what is called as vulnerable in front of someone, right? Especially opposite gender. So when I look back, I'm like, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe I acted a bit too whatever. But, and I do tell myself on those, right? So I think more on that point rather than career decisions and whatever. And to be very honest, if you ask me now, actually no, because each of these things have been a part of who I am now. And they have played a role. So we can always go back in retrospect. I wish I should have done that and this. But honestly, it doesn't really help. So I have now reached a stage where if you ask me this, I'll say no. It's fine. What has happened has happened. I am where I am. Now what I can do from here is up to me.
Yes. Right?
And let me apply that now and for the future. So that's what. So no changes, no regrets. It is what it is.
I'm glad you said that, because I think now I have spoken to a few people on this topic. And what I have realized is when you truly reach a level of loving yourself, you actually accept your life and the way you have lived your life for what it is. You don't regret, because you actually realize that all of it was required for you to reach where you are at today. So I'm glad to hear that, because if you had said something else, then I would have questioned. If you can be very transparent about your life and you don't have to hide anything, and if you don't have any regrets of how you got to where you are at, you've truly made peace with who you are as a person.
Agreed. And also, right, maybe it's a cliche now, but literally, I mean, integrity is who you are when no one is looking. And this is what I basically constantly, so I am my best champion, but I'm also my worst enemy, right? There's one thing I tell a lot of my friends who are, you know, still not clear and often seek outside company is, you have to accept and acknowledge that you are your own best friend. Yes. And in that, you know, what I have realized is, if there is something that I am pushed to do or I have to do, but later I'm not going to like about myself doing it. So it's me asking me, should I be doing it rather than anyone else, right? So who you are to yourself looking in the mirror, will you be able to look yourself in the eye if you do this, is my decision-making point. If that answer is a yes, I will go ahead and do it and I will own whatever comes my way.
So you have to make the decision at that point in time based on the information you have. Are you going to be able to sleep at night knowing you have done
that? Exactly. Exactly. And look yourself in the eye, right? Because if you can look yourself in the eye, you can stand in for yourself. You will be able to stand in for others and also in front of others. Right? But when we push ourselves in positions where we ourselves are, you know, not sure, but we follow somebody else's life path or tracks or advice, that's where it leads to this constant questioning. So I think this is one question maybe I will tell everyone who's listening to also ask themselves in different point in time. There is one more exercise Prerna I tend to do, and I think I've shared this with you before, is every few months, I sort of, you know, sit back, and it can be in any situation, right? It's not as if I block a time or whatever. It could be just, you know, in between meetings or, you know, while I'm taking a shower or whatever, is I ask myself that, do I want my life to be different than what it is? And comparing it with, you know, people around me, my friends. And that's a good gauge for me, because at that point in time, if I tell myself, yes, Aparna, I think you want this more than this, then I should put effort to change it to that. You get it? Because often we don't introspect and we keep going, right? We're just so caught up in going and achieving and following that we don't stop and say, okay, is this where I want to be? So I tend to do these checks. And again, whatever works for whoever, if you want to put in like a 3-month reminder, please do that. For me, I think it just now automatically happens. There is a trigger, right? I constantly check, okay, is there something I want in my life that should change? And then maybe I should put effort to change it. Yes.
Yeah. I was having a chat with some people this week, actually, and sharing my journey with them, because, you know, my journey has been a bit of, you know, I've gone on a very conventional path and then have decided, okay, actually my life needs to change because I'm not happy where I am at. And I think about that as well, right? For me, there are 3 things I always think about is, am I happy about what I'm doing and where I'm at? Am I proud of what I'm doing and where am I at? And if I were to die tomorrow, whatever I'm doing, is it going to leave an impact? Is it going to make world a better place than it is today? And if those 3 things are not checked for me, I am now starting to question, why am I doing it? Because if those are the only 3 things that matter at the end of the day, everything else, whether that's something new I buy or the people I hang out with or the work I do, everything has to fit in those 3 buckets. Now, obviously, it's not as black and white as I'm saying, but largely. And if you can't do that, and you have to decide what are those things for you. Each person has to decide.
Agree. And this, especially the third one. Because the third point of, if I were to die tomorrow, would I be happy if I was looking back at where I was at, honestly has been one of the decision-making factors when I've made career changes, right? So yeah, was in corporate earning blah, blah money, but did I leave an impact? Did I create at least a bit of legacy? So that's actually been my driver, Prerna, and essentially, if I'm asked, right, what is my core driver, what drives me is making a difference. So am I adding value wherever I am? So that, say I die tomorrow, right? Will there be something I'll look back to and say, hey, okay, I did something at least, you know, I left this place a bit better than what it was before I got involved. is something I think that pushes me ahead, which is why the moment things get pretty set, where I don't think I can add any impact or make a difference, makes me highly uncomfortable. And then I try to change. Yeah. So run of the mill, just, you know, accepting status quo, etc., are situations where it sort of, you know, triggers me to think, okay, is this where I want to be? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And then I, you know, sort of then rejig myself if I have to.
So changing gears a little bit, let's get into the rapid fire round. A few quick questions. I think you've done a great job in bringing some of these to life already, but it'll be good to kind of get to them to the point. So what's your life's mantra?
Making a difference.
Brilliant. To the point and perfect. Is there a person that you look up to who you think is a personification of this concept of loving yourself even more than yourself? Is there somebody else out there that is the person for you?
Okay, so I know this is a rapid fire, but actually the answer won't be rapid fire because I'm not someone who idolizes just a single person. There have been different people I've admired for different reasons where, you know, they have found their space and their voice and own their journey. And I'll quickly share names. So first is my father, you know, the fact that he stepped out from his village and took the initiative to come to Mumbai, become a scientist, you know, and really own his space, right? Because had it not been for him, I wouldn't be here. Second is Rani Lakshmi Bai, right? Purely because at that age, she decided to stand up to the British for whatever her reasons were, knowing that she was heading into a losing battle, right? So really that required a lot of, I think, self-assurance and acceptance that I'm going into this and I'll give it my all. And then lastly, two film actresses from India, though I'm not a admirer of, you know, the typical Bollywood flair, but for me, these two women really stand out. And one is, of course, Kangana Ranaut, for whatever she is. You know, she's known as a loudmouth or whoever, but I think she owns her voice and sometimes she has to cry horse to make her voice heard, but she really says what she believes in or for whatever reasons, and she owns it, the good and the bad. And the final one being Sushmita Sen, who I started admiring at a very young age for all the decisions she took in her life and the fact that she chose to be away from mainstream and doing whatever she wanted to do because she believed. And again, she owned both the failures and successes that, you know, came with her life. And she, so these are the people I really, you know, sort of reflect on and keep in my mind, right? That, yeah, I'd like to have their level of self, you know, assuredness and ownership.
Amazing. Amazing. Last but not the least, what are you most excited about as you look out to the next 12 months of your life?
There is a lot to achieve. So I think I would say there's a lot of, you know, fight left in me, right? In the sense there is lots to be achieved. So in my business, in my social enterprise, fundraising, us expanding into different markets, for myself and other projects that I think you and I do together is, I think, again, expanding our impact, reaching out to, you know, more women, touching more plant-based businesses, helping them as much as, you know, possible. So I think that's around the workspace. Personally, I would say, I think I would like to learn a bit more. Yeah. So maybe take out time, not in terms of going away somewhere, but maybe take out dedicated time and, you know, do a few courses in areas that I'm interested in. So I think that's something I want to put in my plan. And I'm literally aiming to make 2022 different from, you know, what 2021 was about. And essentially, yeah, give my 200% to it. So, I mean, these are the things I'm looking forward to in the coming 12 months. Yeah.
And finally, anything, any last minute last things you want to share with our listeners? Any leaving remarks that you may want to give?
I would like to tell people to just own their space, right? There will always be people who will be better or worse off if we start comparing. And I'm also not saying don't compare, but somewhere call it out and move on. Yes. So own your space, move on, you know, get on with it. Life is really too short. I think the pandemic has told us that. So please live the way you would want to live. Live the way such that if you really die tomorrow, right, you would die saying, okay, I did things. At least I didn't hate. Okay. So I think that's what I would say. Not everyone might find things that they love. Yeah. But at least avoid being in places that you hate to be in and keep going. That's it.
Amazing. Amazing. Listen, thank you so much, Aparna, for taking your time. I think there are some very interesting and powerful pieces of advice in there. Appreciate taking the time. I know you have a very busy schedule. Just keep rocking it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And there you have it. Finding your voice and owning your space doesn't come easy. But once you find it, stick to it, because that's a sure short way of falling in love with yourself. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please do share it with your friends and family. And stay tuned as I talk to Mamta Dhingra, a communications and PR advisor, on what it takes to fall back in love with yourself when you find yourself in a relationship that is not meant to be.